You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Hi, and welcome to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast. We are in Los Angeles, California, and I'm Gilly Neseem, your host. I was the guest on the last episode, which is why you remember my weird voice. But today I am the host. My guest today is Carl Tart, who is someone I enjoy very much. And the general population may know him from White Women and from the former Herald team Six Killer. Hi, Carl.
Hi.
So today is an interesting day.
Yes.
This is an interesting time capsule that we get to record. So this is going to be airing in January, but what we are experiencing today is a very strange day in the Herald community of cuts.
Yes, today is cut day.
Today
is shake up and rebuild day. All the people who auditioned this round have found out if they got on or not. Well, some people found out before because of callbacks and stuff like that. But, you know, today is the day. So that's why she said I'm on the former Herald team, Six Killer, because Six Killer has been disbanded
as of
today.
This is fresh news for us. Yes. In January, Carl's going to be on a new Herald team that he literally doesn't know yet.
I don't know who's on that team. I don't know what's the name going to be. I'm hoping it'll be something tight.
Yeah, this is your chance at a new name.
I love naming teams. That's one of my favorite things to do.
So I don't want to, like, you know, poke you or anything. This is a weird day, but it is also a unique, weird opportunity because I think when people want to get into UCB, they start to realize how big it is and how few spots there are for people. So yeah. Can you tell me and the listeners a little bit about what this feels like? Because you kind of got good news, but you kind of got bad news, too.
Yeah. This 700 people auditioned for Herald.
That's so many people.
Yeah. There was 8 Herald teams for the first 6 months of the year this past season. One team got moved up to weekday team. They got graduated as Cardinal Redbird. So there were 7 teams. So kind of everybody knew that there was going to be an all-new team being formed. So that's one. But you don't know who's going to be cut from the year. There was 2 veteran teams, the Dragons and Rococo. They're both safe. They're going to still be around this year with some changes, which are very unfortunate for those people. And there was the other, how many teams is that? So that's 5 teams that I didn't.
Yeah.
So 5 teams. And I think out of 5 of those teams, 3 of them were completely cut.
Yeah, pretty blown up.
Yeah.
So tell me, so Six Killer was one of those teams.
Six Killer was one of those
teams. What is something you're going to miss about Six Killer?
I'm going to miss my teammates. I'm going to miss playing with these. We had so much fun as a team. It was the first team outside of White Women that I felt like a, and this is no disrespect to any other team I've been on, but just like, you know, you got your work, like, friends, and you got your, like, squad. And,
yeah.
And we were a squad, man. We had some good times. We had some really good times. We had, you know, we went on trips and stuff. And
yeah.
We still got a trip to go on, actually. We got to go to Casino
Good,
Morongo.
I'm glad.
Yeah.
Where are you going, sorry?
Casino Morongo. And for those of you who don't know, who are listening on other sides of the nation, Casino Morongo is a casino here in California, in Palm Springs. It's an Indian casino. And we're going to go out there and play some Pai Gow poker.
Just,
I don't know.
Smoke cigarettes around a Pai Gow poker
and
table.
And wear suits. And I'm going to wear a visor and some tinted shades.
That's a fun,
smoke a cigarette.
That's a fun thing to, I think, remember a little bit is improv is an art form, but what you can't really avoid is that it's an art form of a group of people.
Yeah.
And sometimes you fall in love, you know, a certain kind of love, like a friendship love with those people.
Yeah, man. My boy, Matt Cordova is
Get it straight.
became a really good friend of mine. this year.
Yeah. We, as adults, we're out here in LA. People are in New York. People are in all kinds of cities feeling alone, and maybe you're not making friends at your job, but improv, it is first and foremost a performance, but also it becomes our social lives.
Yeah.
And it's that's beautiful.
It's like college. It's kind of like we all live in this kind of Peter Pan situation.
Yeah.
Where none of us have to grow up.
What is something other than a cool name that you're looking forward to now that you're going to be on this? You know, by the time this airs, you'll know who these people are. It'll have a name. What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, we're going to be in the mix by the time this airs. I'm going to be 30 pounds lighter. I'm looking forward to meeting these new people who I've never played with before. I'm looking forward to learning their styles and accompanying their styles, the way they play, playing with their moves, not exploiting them in a bad way, but really
they can
in.
Make you better at one skill that your last team didn't really require of you a ton.
Yeah, looking forward to learning from them, and looking forward to. I mean, I feel like I just it feels like. The feeling of being like spared from a Harold team cut, especially when your teammates weren't so lucky, is like you just I feel like Kevin Durant right now.
Yeah, survivor's guilt.
Yeah, I feel like I was on the Oklahoma City Thunder last year and we lost in the playoffs, and I went to the Golden State Warriors to form a new team. Like, it's like,
yeah, guys, write in the comments if you understand the reference to the sports.
Yeah. I tried to explain it.
Carl knows a lot about improv and a lot about sports, and that is unique. So thank you for allowing us to indulge in that. It is we're going to put that behind us for now. Carl.
Hi.
Hi. Carl, I know you were born in Mississippi. Tell me about Carl Tart. How'd Carl Tart get to improv?
Oh, man. I was born in Mississippi, Pascagoula, Mississippi. I am one of very few improvisers from Mississippi. David Brown is another. And I think there's a couple people at IO that are from Mississippi. It's weird.
Wow. You guys found each other.
We found each other. I started improv after I left college. I was playing basketball in college. And I got cut from the team because we had a terrible team. And they came in and replaced everybody on the team. We were not spared that time. So I came home, and I kind of at that point had lost the drive for basketball. Because, you know, growing up, you pick something and you really want to focus on that thing, and you have dreams and aspirations of being professional at it and stuff like that. And once you start turning around 16, 17 years old, you get the idea that that's not how your life's going to go.
Yeah.
But you still don't want to admit it to yourself because you still got that childlike wonder.
It's always easy, too, to think of just like, man, what if?
Yeah.
Especially something like sports where it's like, if this goes well, it's going to go really well. Like, my life will be set.
Yeah.
But it's a huge risk to be a professional athlete.
Yeah.
Did you, so when you started to doubt that, did comedy come into your life a little bit more?
Nah, I was always, like, I'm sure like most of us are in this community, I was always the jokester. I was always the kind of class clown, but not class clown in the way of like putting a tack on your teacher's seat.
You weren't a villain.
I wasn't a villain. No, I was fun. It was a defense mechanism because being a real insecure kid, you know, you don't want to be the one that's getting roasted. But so you kind of keep yourself out of there, or you be a little bit self-deprecating to yourself.
Make them laugh.
You make jokes. You make them laugh.
What was the first time you saw improv?
The first time I saw improv was on Whose Line Is Anyway.
Sure.
But didn't know what it was. Like, I realized they were making stuff up, but I didn't realize. I just thought it was a funny show. I thought Wayne Brady was a good singer. And then when later, I went to this this show with my friend called Monkey Butler Improv, which is a improv place out here in L.A. that offers free classes, but they're also like a Christian-based thing.
I knew there had to be a catch.
Yeah. That's what I said. I was like, this place can't be offering free class. Like, improv classes are so expensive, and this place is offering free classes. And then at the end of the class, they were like, hey, if you guys want to stick around, we're gonna have a prayer session. And I was like, oh, okay, that's what this is.
Sneaky.
So it was, I mean, they're cool people though. So,
did you take the class?
Not at the time when I saw it. I was like, oh man, that looks really cool. Like, that looks really fun. And then I started doing research on it. But before that, I didn't know I knew I wanted to do comedy. Once I came back, once I stopped doing basketball, I was kind of like, what's the other thing that you were kind of good at your whole life? Like, and people had told me that over sports. Like, oh, you're funny. Like, and I never wanted to be a comedian. I never wanted to admit to anybody that I wanted to be a comedian. I was always a student of comedy. Like, I've been watching SNL since I was like 3.
Yeah.
And Mad TV came on when I was 4, and The Living Color. I grew up in such a cool era for sketch comedy and comedy in general, especially diverse comedy, because in the early 90s, there was all those TV shows like Martin and Living Single, all these comedy shows on television of people that looked like me that other people didn't have that luxury in when they were younger, like the generation before. And so I was able to really learn from, like, Martin Lawrence is probably my biggest influence ever. I've always wanted to be like him.
Martin is one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
I used to watch that, I think, after school all the time.
Hell yeah. I was watching it before I came here today.
Perfect. Yeah. And so you were like, oh, this is a profession that I could actually do?
I didn't think of it like that, because I don't know why I never thought of it. I just knew I wanted to be funny. Like, that was like quoting Martin and quoting In Living Color was like my first laughs.
Yeah.
When I was in, like, very early on, I used to get in trouble, like, at family reunions because my, like, aunts would, like, catch me quoting some dirty Martin joke or something like that, and I'd get, like, whoopings and stuff, but had people laughing, you know, while I was doing. And so I thought stand-up was the only way you could get into, like, comedy.
That was for a long time the way, like, if you were going to be on SNL, you were a stand-up first.
Yeah, yeah. And so I didn't realize that there was this other outlet. And I remember watching stuff like SNL and being like, these people are so funny, but, like, where's their hour special? Like, who are they? You know, like the Will Ferrells and people like that when they first. And so once I stopped playing ball, came back to L.A. And was just kind of working, my mom, like, up and realized one day, like, wait a second, you're supposed to be in school right now. Like, because I didn't tell her I got cut from the team.
And
I just came home and was just at home. And she thought, it's just winter break.
Like, and then winter break
came and went. Yeah.
Spring.
Yeah. And she was like, weren't you supposed to go back to school like 2 years, like 2 months ago? And I was like, yeah, about that. We got cut from the team, lost a scholarship. I'm not going back. And she was like, you're going to do something. And by that time, I had already kind of dreamed up this plan in my head of starting these improv classes. And my mom, luckily, has a theater degree, so she gets it.
She respected the idea that is so awesome. That's such an interesting, like, from one thing to another. Was it weird for you to finally say out loud? I kind of had that a little bit of, like, I used to say, oh, yeah, I want to be a performer, rather than just I'm an actor, because I felt like that was like saying, I think I'm special.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I didn't want to. Like, that's why I didn't want to be labeled a comedian. And exactly, my biggest fear of being labeled a comedian came true once I started taking these classes. And I told my friends that I was taking the classes, my friends that I grew up with, who always thought I was funny, who always supported me being funny, who, like, we'd be like on basketball trips. And we'd be in the hotel room and, like, maybe, like, have girls up there that we found at, like, the game or something. And the conversation goes dull. And they go, hey, Carl, tell a funny story.
Dance, monkey, dance, come on.
Yeah, yeah. They do that. And then, like, once I told them, like, hey, guys, I'm actually pursuing this now. Like, every like, conversation went to, like, oh, so you think you're funny now?
Yeah.
Like, anytime I said anything funny, even if I wasn't trying to do a bit, like, if it was just my natural, like, you know, how we communicate with each other. Oh, Carl over here testing out his material. And it's like, no, I'm not, man. I'm the same person.
I think some people, too, that would shut them down, because it's an awful feeling. And you spent all that time watching Martin, watching comedy and falling in love with it, that there's, like, a major respect for it.
Yeah.
So it's so hard to get from that point of thinking of yourself as a thing and declaring that you're the thing and not caring when someone gives you shit for it.
Yeah, yeah.
What was your first experience in class with improv? Like, how did that feel?
It was weird because I signed up for it. When I told my mom, she, like, asked me what did I want for my birthday that year. I was turning like 20, and I was like, I want to take an improv class. And she was like, what? And so she was like, all right, well, and of course she's like, I've been trying to get you to do this your whole life. Because she did used to try to, like, get me in, like, to be like one of those kid stand-ups. Like, I was like, I don't want to do that. I just had to come upon it myself, you know?
You would have been an amazing kid stand-up.
There was this kid named Lil J who used to be on this, like, this show called Coming to the Stage or something like that. It was a BET stand-up special. And he was, like, my age. He was, like, 13. And I was, like, 13. It was, like, middle school time. And I was like, man, I could do that.
I remember Little J, but where's Little J now?
Nowhere.
Yeah. Sorry, Little J. We love you. Well, come find me. I'll give you some improv classes for free.
Yep. You'll be good at it. You were a natural. But So she was like, well, I've been trying to get you to do it, but fine. Like, sign up. And it's like, she hands me her credit card, and she was like, I'm going to pay for this. But if you don't stick with this class, you're going to pay all this money back. And so I went to the Second City website, and I opened it up. And well, first, I went to Groundlings. And the classes were super expensive, and I knew my mom wasn't going to pay for that. And also, like, I didn't see any, like, really, like, diverse names that I recognized. I saw, like, Phil Lamar was an alumni. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, that's just...
Yeah, why would I put a lot of time and effort into something if it's pretty clear that they're not looking for someone like me? Yeah.
And then as soon as I went to the Second City website, Sam Richardson and Edgar Blackman popped up immediately. So it was kind of like, ah, well, they got it right. It's like supposed to be like a college brochure. You want to show that you got diversity.
Yeah. Where's the kid in the wheelchair? Where's the Asian kid? Who am I connecting to?
Exactly. Exactly. So, like, Sam Richardson, who's on Veep now, and Edgar Blackman, who was in Popstar, like, both popped up. They also had this thing called Brown Co., which at the time, I think Chris Redd, who was supposed to get SNL, like, it came out, but I don't know if it's still going.
This round?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about that when they announced the cast of just like, well, no, well, there is a Latina woman, which was so exciting.
Yeah.
Melissa big ups for her.
She's great. Yeah.
But yeah, it must have been heartbreaking to have that rumor go around about that guy, and then he has to explain to his family.
Yeah. They leaked something, and it was just...
Wrong.
But yeah, he was on that website, and so I was like, well, this is it. I got to sign up for this. And the class was starting that day, like the next available class, because they don't do it like UCB where classes start every day. They do every 8 weeks a class starts.
There's so, like semesters of enrollment.
Yeah. And so a class was starting on that day. It was 2 weeks after my birthday, and I signed up, and I went to class that day. And when I first walked in, like, my mom knowing me so well, being like, you better stick with it. Like, I'm paying this money, you better stick with it. And the first thing was like a big group warm up. And so I walk in. I remember the Saints had just won the Super Bowl that year. And so I walk in with my Saints T-shirt on and like beads around my neck because that's a New Orleans thing. Uh-huh. And I'm a big Saints fan. And we had just won the Super Bowl, or we were going to the Super Bowl. We won like the next week after the class. I didn't look like anybody, like, in the class. Like, nobody was, like, sports, like,
to
driven.
Be fair, you were really decked out.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I was doing the most. I was doing the most. I would never wear that now. Well, I would now if they were going to the Super Bowl.
But, if there was another person in class wearing a Saints jersey and a bunch of beads, you'd have to either marry them or move in with them.
Yeah, yeah. So I walked in, and it was a big group warm-up, and I felt embarrassed, and like, they were like, you know, like this guy in the corner, his name is Josh Funk. He's like playing the piano, like in the corner of this big, huge, like dance studio style room. And he's like separating to four groups and standing in the corners. Now everybody run into the middle and make an A and make a B and like on the ground, mm-hmm. like, you know, like with your group. And then we all separate, like that was weird, but I was just like, Carl, let it go. Like you're not like... None of your friends are here to call you gay, like, because that's what I was worried about, you know, like, just like
not in this room,
not in this room. Like, it's like, just let it go, like, be open about it, have fun. And I did. I let it go, have fun. We all got out of that group warm up, went into our respective classroom. My first teacher was Matt Craig, who is amazing to have as a first teacher because he's so passionate about the art form. He's so great. And he's like he's the showrunner on Wabbit now, which is the new Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Oh my gosh!
And
wow, yeah. Mad respect.
Yeah, yeah, he's awesome. And he like just introduced this art form to me, and it was great. Like I was like, oh man, this is so much fun. You mean I get to make up everything? Because I've always been an imaginative person. So like making up stuff is really fun. And
with then, the group.
Yeah, and in that first level at Second City, when they teach you how to do it, you do all these games like Radio Dial and Coffee Talk and stuff like where it's like, okay, you're a gospel station and you're a hip hop station. I'm going to point to you and you say that, like, you know, just like cheesy stuff like that. And like getting to do that stuff and getting laughs from it was like so much fun.
How important do you think it was to do those kinds of, I think a lot of those 101 type things do end up being kind of silly.
Mm-hmm.
How important was it, do you think, to get that silly stuff right out of the gates?
Oh man, I think it was great. I think it allowed for so much play, you know, because at UCB, you kind of like jump right into like doing some light, like long form almost.
Yeah.
And I, like that's a hard thing to do. Like, a lot of people don't learn how to do that really fast. A lot of people can't pick the idea of that up, saying the yes and stuff like that. So what those silly games allow you to do is get into this state of playing and continuing on. Like, you, all right, I'm going to come back to you. You got to say something different than what you said before. Further it along. Like, pretend somebody's been listening to this station and it's gone on. Like, the next thing coming up next is this. You know, like, and I think that was so important to do. And then, like, he allowed us to start improvising, like, third class in, you know, getting up and doing, like, small scenes.
That's kind of late. Like, I know UCB 101, you do a scene by the end of class.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the way it happened. And then I just had fun every semester. And then at Second City, you kind of stay with your same team the whole way through the program.
And it That's culminates. Interesting. You call it a team and not a class. It probably it feels a lot more like a team if you're together the whole time.
Yeah, you're together the whole time. And then once you get to Conservatory 3, you start to write your sketch show. So that's how Second City program works. The whole conservatory program culminates in you putting up an 8-week sketch show. And so you start writing, and then, you know, you get into fights, and it's but you've been with these people for so long. Like, by this time, you've been with these people for a year. Like, every 8 weeks for a year. You see them once a week for a year. They're your friends now. You got lifelong friends in the class. You start beefing.
It's different than work, too. At work, there's more of a creative. If it's a creative environment, it's a professional creative environment. So, you know, you have, like, rules you have to abide by. And you're also not opening up. Like, if you're that group for a year, I imagine you guys were, like, really getting to know each other. Really opening up your creative souls. Okay, so fast forward to now, you started UCB. Mm-hmm. Tell me about how White Women came to be.
White Women came to be. Those guys did the UCB Black History show that year. So Ronnie, Zeke, Ishmael, and Lamar and Majid did the Black History show. And Zeke sent out an email after that saying, hey, would you guys want to start a group and add people who you want to add? And so Ronnie hit me up because I had known Ronnie already, because when I started at Second City, I fell in love with improv, like, immediately. And so I immediately started being a fanboy and going to the jams and stuff. Nice. But Second City.
So you didn't have to pay your mom back?
No, I didn't have to pay my mom back.
You stuck with it.
I stuck with it. I went through the whole program and I paid for it myself and I worked for it and I interned and everything. But I was doing it every night, like, coming up to the theater, watching the veteran shows, coming up But you see, Second City doesn't have, like, an indie improv circuit, you know? UCB does have this, like, all these shows around. So I found all those shows and started hanging out at those jams. Like, even though I wasn't taking classes over here, I was coming to the Crash Bar Jam and the TNT Jam.
Oh, wow. So you were mixing in with UCB students when you were a Second City student.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it was at a jam at I.O., I think, that I met Ronnie. And, you know, it was that thing that
love at first sight.
No, it was the sizing up at first sight, because it was like, okay, you the other black dude in here. Well, I'm gonna watch your set and I'm gonna see how good you are. Neither of us were good at this time.
Sure.
Like, it was so early on in both of our improv careers.
I'm sure you showed, like, sparks. Of something.
Yeah, it was fun. We were having fun, you know. And but then we became friends. He came up to me and was like, hey, man, you funny. And I was like, yeah, man, you too. And then we just kind of talked for a while and talked about how we started. So we ended up, me and Ronnie had, like, 2-man teams and 3-man teams before White Women even started, before I even came over to UCB. And then once I started doing stuff over here and started getting more in the act, he invited me to play with this team that they were forming. And then Iffy made his way onto the email chain too, like, y'all not gonna do this without me. Like, because I don't even think he was in the Black History show. And that's how 7 of us formed. And we got Colton Dunn as a teacher, as a coach, and we did a rehearsal and we came up with the name, and it was kind of like history from there on, because we had so much fun.
Beautiful history.
And we finally found, I don't know if you notice how we play. We don't play very technical all the time, but it's because we're having so much fun.
So much fun. I think there's technical. So just in case you're living under a rock, the team White Women is composed of black
7
men.
Black men, yeah.
Who are at this point now all, like, you know, really great UCB performers. Some are on teams, some haven't gotten on them yet, but I'm sure, you know.
We got 4 house team members now, because Majid just found out today on this day of shake-ups that he
made a
Herald team.
Uh-oh, you're leaking the news, January.
Yeah.
but what's awesome that happens sometimes is that whether people are on house teams or not, a group is so awesome that they are undeniable and they get shows at the theater without necessarily being affiliated first with the theater. So you guys, I think sometimes people think there's only one path. Yeah. There's only one route to getting to perform or to getting stage time yeah. at the main stage. But that is not true. And you guys are a great proof of that. You guys got together. You had something magic. You worked at it. You didn't just, you know, I think sometimes teams, when they are having a lot of fun, they don't get a coach.
Yeah.
It's more about the fun. And you guys are a great mix of like fun, but also like really killer improv.
It's fun. You know, we haven't had a coach in a while. So I don't want people to think that we're still like out there. Like also because we became such good friends, it causes for a lot of infighting, but mm-hmm. the fighting is okay because yeah. we know it's going to be all right at the end of the day.
Do yeah. you guys talk stuff out?
Sometimes. You know, it's seven dudes who are kind of moving along, chugging along at the top of the game, at the top of their game, their personal game, that, like, egos get involved.
Yeah.
So talking out stuff doesn't always happen.
Yeah,
it kind of just resolves itself at times. But because, you know, like I said, we have four house team members, but the other like two members that aren't on house teams are both staff writers on television shows.
They're doing OK.
yeah. So it's kind of like, oh, we can't tell each other nothing at times. But yeah. we always kind of come back and get the bigger picture ahead, because just like nobody wants to be the lesser person. Nobody also wants to be the person who sabotages everything.
Absolutely. You guys, you're dedicated to the group.
Yeah.
What is something you can do with white women that you can't do with another team?
Oh, that's a easy but tough question, you know what I mean? Like, it's with white women, we have this reference base that we can go to that I can't go to without my other team. A reference base that I think most of us on the team were afraid to use before we got on. We make this our show. Our running show right now is called Your Token Friend, and we put this together because basically all of us were the token friends of people in this community for a long time before we joined together
on different teams too. Maybe
on different
being
teams,
the only,
yeah. And we would come out and make references to certain things, and I'm not here to say that this community is racist or something like that, but you know, for a while it was kind of hard to make references to stuff that we knew personally that made us laugh, because other people wouldn't get the references, and it become like this, like, oh God, Carl's going black. When it's like, most of the references that people make in this community are technically going white,
yeah.
but people just say, oh, but that's normal. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, if I had a penny for every time someone referred to white as normal,
yeah.
I'd be rich.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a crazy, and it's not necessarily bad people making that, but and I've heard improvisers make that call too, in scenes, out of scenes, of just like, oh well, yeah, there could be like you could do it like in India, or you could do it with like a normal guy, and it's like what?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
There's what?
Exactly.
So yeah. that to be able to like communicate in that way, there's a lot of people who try to make parallels between sexism and racism. I can't. I don't think that it's the same.
Yeah.
But when I'm on a group with all women, we are able to fly on certain things in a way that when it's a guy, they'll call something weird that we didn't think was that weird.
Exactly. And the thing is, you guys as an all-woman team will know everything that dude's talking about. Just like we yeah. as black people would know
we
everything.
Go women. We just
yeah,
went.
We just went ourselves.
Yeah.
like for example, we are somehow some. In some parts more well-versed being on all minority or women teams, like, because we know all the references to normal white male cis culture, and also our own references. With they don't know those things. They only know those references.
Yeah. They've never been asked to step outside.
Yeah. So like I know the whole Eagles catalog. I'm a big Eagles fan. But I also know the whole Pretty Ricky catalog. You know, like I really love Pretty Ricky. I compare both of those bands. I think they're the same. Just no. But yeah, you know what I'm saying.
I thought you meant Eagles, the sports team, and I've been lost since then.
No, I'm not an Eagles fan. I'm not a Philadelphia Eagles fan. I am the Eagles, Hotel California.
I got you now. Like, I got you.
And
now.
Fleetwood Mac and all that type of stuff. I know those references. I know those songs and stuff like that. But mm-hmm. I also know a bunch of hip hop and R&B.
And neither one is normal.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Awesome. Let's talk improv technique, Carl. What do you say?
Let's do it.
What I'm curious about is what was a moment where you felt like things were clicking for you in class or in your indie shows, or what was like a stage or like a level of classes where you're like, okay.
UCB 201, when we were learning game.
Yes. 201 is the toughest level. I think it's really great that everyone comes out and just says that.
Yeah.
Because you'd think 401 would be the hardest.
Nah.
No.
201.
201, and then you have two more levels to marinate
on
that.
And it was especially hard for me having finished a program already, because I was like, oh, yeah, I'm pretty good at this.
I get it.
And then you get into the, I'm like, I know what game is. Like, because we graze over game, like, at Second City. And IO, of course, like, game is in every comedy scene ever. Mm-hmm. So it's not like one school teaches game and nobody else does.
It's just different words for it.
Yeah. And so, but once I started trying to figure out a way to, like, really focus on it, it was really hard. And then once I kind of got it, it was like, oh, this is how you would do that. It's the same thing you've always been doing. You're overcomplicating it. Like, that's what really, when I said, okay, like, now I'm kind of getting this, you know?
Yeah. This is an insane analogy, but it's like you kind of have an idea of what sex is as a kid. Then when you start, like, being told about it, it's just like, huh? Like, it becomes bigger than what it really is.
Yeah.
It's like, no. It's always just a thing in a hole somewhere.
Yeah.
You know? It's as simple as you thought. Don't let all the terms and weird positions freak you out. That was a crazy analogy. what's some advice that you got? Is there something you can remember a teacher saying to you that really, like, spoke to you or really helped things click?
I had Brett Christensen for Improv 201, and when we were struggling with the game, like, he would kind of tell us, like, what would be the next logical, like, progression of this, like, when we were trying to be like, oh, all right, okay, so this guy's drinking out of a mug, and, like, he said that his wife just died, so the game is, when your wife dies, you drink coffee. And it's like, no, that's not like that's not the game. Like, it, and he, like, kind of broke it down to us. I don't remember specific things that he said, but he kind of just, like, broke it down to us and, like, okay, you're overcomplicating this. It's just that first unusual thing. Like, what's unusual? The fact that this man is drinking coffee. He just said his wife died, but he said it with no emotion. Like, yeah, my wife died, so I poured a cup of coffee. Like, have you had another wife that died? Like, why are you so, like, wouldn't that be weird to you?
So
that's kind of what clicked in my head. Like, don't overthink it. Like, don't look at everything and be like, okay, I got to break this down to figure out this game. And
logic is an interesting thing to bring up, because there's some games that end up being, like, the details are so crazy, but you can kind of boil it all down. I got a really good note once of just, like, when you're thinking about the game on that back line trying to do a second beat, take away the specifics.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, that scene might have been, like, a guy who delivers really, you know, he says his wife dies, but he acts very casually and drinks coffee. Mm-hmm. When you're on that back line, take away the wife died and the coffee, and it's just guy delivers bad news casually.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh,
I get it, yeah.
Okay, there is a certain amount of logic. And so what's other bad news? What's another casual way to deliver it?
Yeah.
Holy smokes, yeah. I think we've got it.
Yeah. I think it's also very important to note that you're going to, like, as soon as you feel like you've gotten it, you're going to do it with confidence.
Uh-huh.
And she's going to be like, that's not how you're supposed to do it. And it's like, wait, but what? I just thought, like, you get so many. It's still hard. It was hard this year on Herald, because, you know, going into second beats, trying to make it, like, not the easy thing. Don't do time dash, you know, like, and trying to make it something more enjoyable to watch, something
blow
more fun to play,
unexpected.
Blow it out.
Yeah.
And that was really hard this year.
That's
also something I want to work on. What I'm working on right now, because it's January.
What you're already 4 months into working on.
What I'm already 4 months into working on.
With your brand
30
new team,
lighter.
Insert title here.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to find out what it is.
Yeah.
I'm going to plug my ears until January and then find out then. That's going to be hard. I might lose a lot of work.
Yeah.
I'm going to be a bad improviser.
Bad improviser.
But it will be worth it.
Yeah.
You kind of touched on that of, like, things you hope to work on. What was something that you remember as a student really struck, like a concept that you struggled with a little bit?
A concept.
Or a skill, or, you know.
Straight manning, but not in the way, because when I first started, it was a defense mechanism to straight man. It was like, I'm not going to look stupid. Like, I'm going to call this dude out. This dude wants to walk out here and be, oh, yeah? Well, I'm going to say this.
You still had your basketball teammates in your head a little bit?
Yeah. And so straight manning in a way of caring, like giving gifts to play with, and like while saying no, being like, no, come on, don't do this. Oh, you're telling me now you're going to do this? Like straight manning in a way that was helping that other person play their game. I think that was a struggle for me. And it's something that I can do because, like, Paul Welsh, who was my coach for the first 6 months of Six Killer, like, I went to him with this concern. I said, I don't want my team. I feel like I'm not good at this, and I don't want to sabotage the show. I don't want to, like, mess up my teammates when they're trying to do stuff by going.
You were often playing a big character.
Yeah, and not even. Yeah, I was often playing a big character because that's kind of, like, my favorite thing to do, you know? I still look at this. I still approach improv with a childlike whimsy of like, this is fun.
Yeah, we're playing pretend.
We're playing pretend. It shouldn't have to be serious. And I still agree with that and still think that that's true. But I wanted to make sure that I was able to play both sides of the car. And Paul told me, he's like, you do it all the time. It was like you can still play a character while you're straight manning.
Yep.
And he kind of like, he was like giving me examples on times that I had done it and was like, see, you can do it. Like, it's not.
Wow. So you were being harder on yourself than your coach was.
I always am. I always am because I have this yearning to be really good at this. Like, I find myself getting offended when people say, oh, well, Carl's funny. Like, Carl's funny. But Ronnie is such a great improviser. And why do we get offended by things? Because we know that in our heads. You know, mm-hmm. I know Ronnie's a stronger, he's a game machine, you know? He plays it, and I want to have that aspect to my, like, repertoire.
Yeah, that's why I feel that way sometimes of, like, especially being in a group where it's like, this person's got that part covered.
Yeah.
I don't want ever to feel like I'm losing a skill and deferring to another teammate. And that's where coaches are really important because mm-hmm. don't just let me be this kind of player or like the funny one. Like, let's all have the opportunity to play a big character. Let's all have an opportunity to be the one who like drives the game, the one calling stuff out. Like, it feels bad when people just want to like label you one thing.
Yeah, it sucks. It sucks, especially when you're already insecure about being that one thing. Because like I was saying, like I just have this yearning to be good at this art form and for people to be like, you know, go down in history. It's like, oh, man, yeah, that guy. I used to love watching him on stage. I used to love seeing him play. And people say that, but kind of for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, you know?
Like, oh, man, that scene was struggling. But, girl, you came out as that octopus and you made it. And I was like, well, yeah.
Okay. That comes a lot. Well, first of all, I know that you do. Me and Paul Welsh, we all know, the world knows, you do have those technical skills. But yeah, you don't want to be the one who's just like the goof. Like, okay, you only said that because you don't know about improv.
Yeah.
I want people, the nerds who know about improv and the first timers to be like, good stuff.
Yeah.
That, I wanted to talk about this a little bit. Carl and I got to be on a sketch team, a UCB sketch team together for a year. And I got to watch Carl play some of those big characters he was talking about.
Yeah.
And it's really fun. How does working in sketch, does it ever come into play when you're improvising? Does it help? Does it hurt?
It helps. It helps me. It might throw some other people off. It helps me, though, because I'm able to. I think one of my favorite characters that I ever got to play on Harold Night was this dude that I named Guillaume, which is like a southern, like New Orleans man of the gentry, kind of like lifelong bachelor, like like kind of guy that wanted to be a part of a debutante ball. So like I pulled from the opening somebody who's like, I want to be a part of the debutante ball, but I'm too old. Or I'm not right for, like, you're not right for the debutante ball. So I'm like, who would be the last person to ever be in debutante ball? A 70-year-old, greetings, my name is Guillaume, and I would like to join this debutante ball. And, like,
you guys, you wouldn't believe it, but Guillaume is unfolding before me. Guillaume is in the studio.
I am young. And I got to play that character, and Kim, like, played a perfect, Kim Cooper, who was on my team, played a perfect straight man to straight woman to the character, and she like gave me this gift. It was like, she's like, wait a second, are you walking with two canes? Do you have limps in both legs? And I got to like play like this super big physicality, and it was really fun. And it turned into a character game. Like, even though it, like that character kind of overshadowed, like, I'm a guy who wants to be a part of, who thinks he's a 14-year-old girl. That was the game that I was trying to go for, but the character kind of overshadowed that.
Yeah.
But I think that's like a aspect of like, I, like Patrick McDonald ended up writing a sketch for that like character on our new mod team, and I think it's really fun, like, when I can involve my sketch ass, because like here at UCB, a lot of the improv is like writing based, you know?
Yeah.
Like, a lot of the players who are on Herald Night are writers at heart. You know, they like, a lot of them are writers on mod teams instead of performers on mod teams. But like me and you, we're both Herald performer and mod performer. And so it's fun to, you know, be able to do both. And
yeah.
I get a lot of action, like, because I get to create these characters off the bat.
Like, you just wrote for a TV show as well, right?
I did. I just wrote for Mad TV.
I got scared. I wasn't, I don't know why, for some reason, like, they keep that a secret.
No.
Like, they pretend like the actors wrote it all or something.
Yeah.
No, there's writers. You get credit. Does UCB improv ever come into play when you're writing that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. Because it was, I would improvise the scenes that I wanted and, you know, play game and try to, that's how I make it. Because a lot of the actors on the show would come to me and pitch, oh, I have this character and this character does this. Oh God. And I'm like, well, what's the,
that's a sound.
Yeah. That's a sound. What is that? Yeah. But then he like walks into the room and he sees a banana and he goes, oh, banana. And I'm like, well, that doesn't help me.
That's like, okay, a sound and a fruit.
Yeah.
Okay.
So now I have to basically put this into a first beat and be like, okay, what is the game of this guy? Let's give this dude a game when he walks in that he can say, oh, banana. And that's how, like, I would always kind of write it like a first beat of a Herald. Almost.
That's interesting.
Like, yeah.
I think UCB is unique, too, in that I've taken one level of sketch at UCB. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people who considered themselves actors or performers first, so they took the improv program and then later took the sketch program. And I know a lot of people who considered themselves writers and they took the sketch program first and then the improv program. And whatever your like entry point was, they're really similar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you learn the writing of sketch, your improv is really good.
Yeah.
And when you're learning improv, your writing is really good.
Yeah.
Like, whatever you see yourself as, A, you don't have to be one thing. Take it from me and Carl.
Mm-hmm.
And B, it's game is the same in both.
Yeah.
UCB sketch writing and UCB game, they just so happened to find the formula that makes a funny scene and makes a funny sketch. And if you want to call it a, you know, it is a formula. It's there. And then you toss it out when it's not working, obviously. But, like, it's teachable and it's there and you can count on it. Like, you can fucking rely. Sorry for cussing. You can rely on that formula, at least as training wheels, to be like, oh, I had one unusual thing. I figured out the philosophy behind it. I hit it three times. I got a sketch or a scene.
Yeah.
It's pretty rad.
It's right.
Do you think improv changed your brain?
Yep. Yeah,
how
I find myself improvising with myself. Like, somebody will say something in everyday life, and I'll like yes and it
out loud.
Yeah, out loud sometimes, or sometimes I'm such a like silly person that somebody will say something, and I'll improv immediately takes your brain to another place. Like, say if it's like a song lyric, like if the song is I don't know how to explain what I'm saying quick enough without taking up too much time. But,
do it. Let's go for it.
If somebody says something in everyday life that's a song lyric, I will continue on with that song lyric.
So you're yes-anding.
Yes-anding, yeah.
That was very short.
Yeah. But I was trying to come up with a song lyric, like something that somebody would say in everyday. Okay, so if somebody said, hey, we're having a rehearsal this week, what day? Saturday, I would go in the park, which is a Chicago reference. and I, you know how it makes you think of something else.
Yes, that skill is often called like Rolodexing.
Yeah,
of just like what is this thing that you said? What else do I know about it?
Yeah.
Also, I think it's sort of like support.
Yeah.
And wanting to like jump on that fun thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I like
Who's
to. I like
man
to.
Man, the 4th of July.
Yeah. I like to improvise with store clerks.
Oh
and,
yeah.
And they don't get it, or somebody will say a joke to me, and then perfect example. We went up to we were going to Austin a couple weeks ago for an Out of Bounds Comedy Festival, and we had to fly through Oakland. And I had on another sports reference. I had on a Dodgers jersey. Dodgers is the L.A. team.
Heard of them?
Yeah. We were in San Jose. And in San Jose, they are San Francisco Giants fans. The Dodgers and the San Francisco Giants have a big rivalry.
Big old rivalry.
So I'm walking around San Jose with this Dodgers jersey on. And like we get on a bus from the airport. And the bus driver goes, well, you can't get on my bus. You're going to have to take that off. And I go, I'll take it off. I'll burn it. I'll do whatever you want, like that. And she's like, hey, I'm just playing with you. It's all right. And I'm like, I was just playing with you, too. Like, you thought I was serious?
Come on. I love doing that, too. Improv is, you just get really used to weird ideas,
yeah.
I think, and, like, jumping on them. I my roommates like to watch a lot of reality TV. The Bachelor is on in my house, and I've started watching it, too. So I can't speak badly about it. But when you're sitting there, they are fans of it, so they can just, like, watch it. I'm sitting there just calling out every... There's too many unusual things.
Yeah.
There's so many unusual... Like, but she just was dating this other guy the other day. Now yeah. she's dating this guy, and why are they all on a mountain now? How did they get there? How can you picnic on a mountain? How did they bring it up? They're all wearing heels and very tight dresses. Did they eat lunch today?
Yeah.
Like, it's... Just that like improv has done that. I think it's like I in relationships too, like the person that I'm dating, like if he does something, it's not like to be a mean girlfriend. That's like my biggest fear. But like if he says or does something silly, I have to call it out.
Yeah.
And it's not my brain hasn't made the decision. You know what? You should say something. It happens because we are trained of just like, you just did something silly. Can we just laugh about it for a second? Because if we blow past it, you're going to think it's not silly and that's not good for anybody.
Yeah.
that's so, this is, I love this. how much rule breaking do you think you do in improv?
A ton. I think I break the rules a ton. I think that was one of my bigger criticisms from the artistic director this year.
So you got personal notes from the artistic director?
She had a workshop, a Herald team workshop.
So this was said live?
Yeah, like, live in front of everybody to embarrass me. And no, I'm just playing. But I don't break rules to try to sabotage. I don't break rules to be a selfish player. But sometimes the next game move isn't what logically would happen or something like that, and I will say something else or call out something. I think that's why they say we don't play very technical on white women, is because we're constantly calling each other out and stuff, but we can always kind of recover because we do have the technical aspect in our brains. You know, we know what we're doing. But
you are a very playful person, I would say, in general. So
yeah.
It makes sense to me that you might.
Yeah, I like to play around. We're having fun. Like, this is the most fun.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
When you're in a scene and you feel like maybe it's not going so well, is there ever, I don't want to say like a technique you use to get out of it, but can you like remember a scene that wasn't going so well that you kind of like wanted to make a move to try to take it in a new direction?
This is one thing that I learned from Keegan-Michael Key was he was my physicality teacher at Second City.
Cool.
Yeah. And
they have a class called physicality.
Yeah,
that's cool.
He taught it. It was like a workshop that I took, and he was like, "Use your environment whenever you feel like a scene is not going well." So like, whatever they said the setting was, like if it's a farm and the scene's not going well, go get a bucket off the wall and fill it up with water, or sit down and milk a cow, do something like that, and that'll give you something new to talk about in the scene. Now, this doesn't apply to being on a Herald team here. This applies to just general long form, you know, just playing relationship based, like who are we to each other? What is this scene about?
All those basics are there for a reason.
Yeah.
It's so crazy that moment when you're just like, I don't know, where did we say we were? Okay, barn, you know, like you get that note from a teacher, and then when you get a chance to live it on stage, like in a Herald or any show, it's just like, that's why they told us to label the location or label the relationship, because it gives us a reality to exist in. Mm-hmm. Oh, man, that's so satisfying.
And it can bring you back on game, you know? So if you think the scene's not going anywhere, if it's stagnant, if a game move was missed by your scene partner or something like that, go do something physical. Go do some object work. Go talk about the environment that you're in. Make it cold outside. Make it too hot. Do something. And that'll be like, you're always this. And if the original game of the scene was, you're a complaining person. And, like, you know, it's hot out here. It's cold.
You're going to find a way back into it. Yeah. Yeah. What is your favorite definition of game?
The first unusual thing, and playing the hell out of it. Like, making it more unusual. Taking it to the next, like, level.
I love playing the hell out of it. I like that.
Yeah.
Can you, I know that's not easy to ask, but can you expand on that at all? Playing the hell out of it?
Like finding that unusual thing, this guy who delivers bad news wrong, and what's the worst possible news that he can deliver? And
okay.
And what's the most apathetic way he can deliver?
Just heighten.
Yeah, heighten, explore.
I love that. How important is it, like, you know, you have a day job, you have this writing job, or, mm-hmm. you know, you could have done anything in the day. How important is, like, your state of mind going into an improv show?
I like to be happy. I like to be ready to have fun. I've been getting into a habit of drinking before improv shows.
Interesting.
Which I don't think is a good, like, always a good idea.
How much?
Not a lot. Like, I don't get drunk.
I used to think that's what happens. I used to think, like, I can't wait to be on a team at some comedy theater, and we're all going to get drinks before, and we're going to do the show and be on fire, and then we're going to get drinks after, and we're going to be gods and heroes.
Yeah.
And then I saw, not here in college, I saw, like, a show where one of the guys was really hammered, and everyone had done a shot, and he had done, like, five more, and everyone else just did one, like, celebratory sort of, like, relax shot. Mm-hmm. And it scared me from ever drinking before a show. Does it kind of, like, relax you, or is it more of just sort of, like, symbolic, like having a drink before?
I think I like to do it with a team, and I think it's like a, you know, bonding before the show. I don't like to warm up. So I know that's like definitely like a I talked to a legend about this, like, who's like a Chicago guy from back in the day who's been doing it for 30 years. He's the dude in every commercial that has a thick mustache, you know, like white
guy. I think I know. What's his name?
I can't remember right now. Okay. But
we thank you, legend.
Yeah, he's a Chicago legend, like, and he's in like all types of commercials. He got a real thick mustache.
I want to guess, but I'm scared I'll get it wrong. Yeah.
But I talked to him about warming up. I was like, man, I hate warming up. And he was like, yeah, everybody hates warming up and practicing once they're like 6-7 years in. 5 to 7 years in is like a period where you think you're really good, and you probably are getting good, and you probably are getting rewards for being good. And then you get this cockiness about you, and you start to lose your focus on what you're actually good at, you uh-huh. know, and you kind of settle into your ways. You got to always remember,
sounds like me.
Yeah, you got to always remember that you're still learning every day, and that there's people out there who you're improvising around who've been doing it for 30 years, and you've been doing it for 6. And so, yeah, you're better than that person who just started 101. You're better than that person who probably just finished 401. You could probably teach that person a few things. You probably are a teacher, but also remember, you're still learning every day.
Yes.
And warming up and practicing are very important.
I think, though, I don't want to disrespect the legend. I think as long as you're hanging out, that can be a form of a warm up.
And that's what I like to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't. I mean,
connecting.
Yeah. I'm down to connect, but doing zip zap zop and categories and stuff like that, it kind of just like, why are we doing this? Like, I still like, can we just sit down and talk to each other, check in on our days? How are you today? What'd you eat? How'd it go? Like, What's up? Like, having a conversation with somebody.
Let's,
like,
make sure your diet's on point. Are you getting enough nutrients?
Are you getting your greens? Are you getting your vegetables? I feel like we've been talking this long now. We do a great improv show after this.
Yeah, probably.
Because we connected, and we ain't warmed up.
We did improv together once, and we called it Sergio Chili, and Sergio it was Chili. Pretty good. And I actually recall us making plans to do it again. But
yeah, we have to. That was really fun. So chili.
Yeah, I thought it was fun too. I think the idea was like Carl Gilly chili, and then there's a person that we know named Sergio Chili.
Yeah.
What are some? This is another. I like asking these abstract questions because this is my chance. Mm-hmm. What are some things you say to yourself in your head during a show? Like, is there a dialogue that you have, or is it kind of like it goes blank and you're just totally in it?
Well, on Harold Night, you get into your head, which is so funny that our sweatshirts say don't think because you're constantly thinking.
I agree. I talked about that in the last one.
Yeah.
Yes. Or whenever it airs, when Oscar interviewed me, I agree.
Yeah.
There's a lot to think about.
There's so much to think about. Like, we were on 6 Kilo, we were doing an opening. We were doing an interview style opening where two people would come out and talk about stuff. And you have to listen to everything they say. And you have to start generating, like, okay, what could I do as a first beat? Like, what could I, not like pre-planning, but sort of pre-planning. Like,
yeah. That's what you're taught to do is to take, what is the specific that I can use in my scene?
Yeah. Yeah. And then, how am I taking this that they put together and turn it into a scene? What's the game? And then sometimes you get so caught up trying to focus on the first one that you miss the second one. You're like, wait, what'd they say?
Oh my God.
Oh no.
I was here thinking about my thing and then other thing happened. Now when that goes up, I'm going to be clueless.
Yeah. Yeah. And then also, oh shit, now it's my turn to go out and do a monologue. What am I going to talk about? Like that type of thing. And how do I present enough details so my teammates can play their scene? Like, so it's a constant dialogue. And then, I don't, like, once we're doing first beats, like, you're looking at everybody else's first beats so you can perhaps elaborate on those first beats in the second beats.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, like, wait a minute, what are we going to do for a group game? Like, what are we going to, like, I'm not done thinking until those lights go down.
Yeah. I got a good note once of just, like, yes, you do need to think. When you're listening to the opening, you need to retain some of those from pattern game to, you know, voicemail.
Mm-hmm.
You need to retain some sort of specific or an idea, or at least the suggestion from the audience, something so that you can do your scene.
Yeah.
Then you need to shut it up and listen.
Yeah.
And then when you're on the back line to do a beat, you want to have an idea of that initiation, and then you need to shut it up and you need to listen. And mm-hmm. It's so hard to shut that dialogue off. And, I think in general to premise-based improv, which is probably what most Harold teams are doing because we have an opening where we're generating premises and ideas, I think it sometimes felt like I was like shutting off the discovery phase because we were like having to live out this premise versus, look, it was just the initiation. I don't know where it was going to go. Let's find out together, huh?
Yeah.
You and me. Let's yes and this all the way through.
Yeah.
I think sometimes, too, I will say something as an initiation to my teammates, and I think it makes sense off of the opening, and I get a blank stare back, and mm-hmm. it's just like, oh, maybe it didn't make sense.
Or maybe they're just like trying to make sure they don't say the wrong thing, because that's another thing that I'm having a dialogue about while I'm talking to my scene partner. I'm like, don't, like, if she's giving you something to, like, play it. Don't, like, get it. Pick her up what she's saying.
Yeah.
And then also, Fernie made it clear to us that we could ask. Like, I think that's something.
Isn't that the most relaxing note of, like, what? You mean we can be human beings and ask to clarify?
Clarify. What do you want me to do? Like, if you come out, you initiate something and you don't get what she's initiating, or like you say, wait, so we're clear here. Are you saying that you do this?
Mm-hmm.
And that person will be like, yeah, what's wrong with it? You know, like something like that. And it's great.
Yeah.
That's a great, like, you can do that. If that's one note that I will give to the listener of this podcast,
isn't it a
feel
relief?
Feel free to ask.
Listeners, don't you feel so relieved?
Yeah.
I think it's interesting too, because the better you get, the more concepts you have a good grasp on. You're playing game, you're labeling everything, but little things like that, like just like being a human.
Mm-hmm.
You can go back to it.
Yeah.
It's okay to ask a question rather than pretending like you're hip and you know.
You know, yeah,
and,
exactly.
And that's going to ruin a scene because your character only knows what you know.
Yeah.
So sometimes you got to teach yourself a thing so your character can know it.
Yeah.
Like even just so much as like, oh, I got the suggestion of like, I don't know, it's hard to flambé.
Yeah.
Let's say I didn't know what flambé was. To just be like, okay, I'm going to somehow do a whole show that was inspired by a word I've never heard before. No. Excuse me, what is that? I've never heard of that before. Oh, what a relief.
We used to do that at Boom. Like, whenever we would get something.
Oh, yes, Carl performed at Boom Chicago for a year, which is an improv troupe that performs in English in Amsterdam.
In Amsterdam, yeah. And so we get suggestions from the audience sometimes, and we don't know what they are.
No, because you're in Amsterdam.
Yeah, some foreign shit. And then, we're not supposed to.
I don't know. Yeah. I've cussed.
Yeah. But we'd say, there was this bit that we had so many, like, built-in improv bits, improv in quotations, that we go. Now, me, like you and I, we know what that is. But for all the idiots in here, what is that? And then, like, that's how you could, like, get them to explain what it was.
Uh-huh.
Some, like, Dutch oven or whatever. Like,
yeah. That's such a classic move, though, of, like, using that self-deprecating humor. I mean, it's not really self-deprecating in that moment, but just, like, using humor to bring everyone on the same page and put everyone at ease.
Yeah.
Carl, we're going to wrap it up, but before we do, I want to know what is, you did give us one piece of advice, that great piece. What is something that you look forward to in your improv journey that's coming up?
I look forward to becoming a better improviser when it comes to, like, still keeping the way I play now, because I don't want to lose the way I play because I have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So maintaining the fun that I have now, and also learning and growing to be more scientific and more formulaic.
And that process is never done for any of
us. It's never done.
Oh boy, it's never done. Guys, that was a long form improv conversation. That's how that sounds. Tune in to the next episode when Carl is going to be your host.
I will be the host. And it's going to be the most lit episode.
Oh my God, he just set off fireworks in the studio. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you keep listening. Make sure you stay off for Carl. He's going to be the most lit episode ever.
Most lit episode ever.
Have a great rest of the day. Thanks.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at UCBtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.